From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Baltimore is still searching for its next police chief after the mayor's nominee withdrew yesterday. The next commissioner confirmed will be Baltimore's fourth in a year as the city struggles with gun violence and implementing the reforms required by the federal consent decree. Journalist Brandon Soderberg describes the toll of uncertain leadership.
We're averaging about a police commissioner every 2 years at this point. It's pretty brutal. And so I think the department, in terms of what I hear, is morale is a concern. They want someone's going to show up and be a steady hand and ideally be here for a while.
And Ray Kelly, interim director of Baltimore Community Mediation Center, tells us how the consent decree process is steadily moving forward. It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Joel Fitzgerald, Mayor Catherine Pugh's pick to lead the Baltimore Police Department, withdrew his name from consideration yesterday. In a statement, Fitzgerald said that both the outpouring of support from the Fort Worth, Texas community, where he is chief of police, and a medical emergency suffered by his 13-year-old son persuaded him not to pursue a move to Baltimore. As Baltimore searches for its next police commissioner, its fourth since last January, many residents are questioning the selection process and calling for more transparency. Joining me to discuss it is journalist Brandon Soderberg. He's co-founder of Baltimore Beat and former editor of City Paper. He's also co-authoring a book on the criminal activity of officers in the now disbanded Gun Trace Task Force of the Baltimore Police Department. Thanks for being here, Brandon.
Well, thanks for having me.
Even without Fitzgerald withdrawing his name, do you think he would have been confirmed by the city council?
There at least four city council members had said as of a few weeks ago that without seeing certain additional information, they were not going to confirm him. That included things like his resume. They were then provided a heavily redacted version, which is not exactly encouraging. I got the sense, and this is just sort of reading into it, watching the politics of this city, that Fitzgerald was really had an uphill battle against a council that has a little bit of egg on its face for approving Mayor Pugh's last commissioner pick, Daryl D'Souza, who, as we know, after a few months was hit with federal tax issue charges. And at that time, only a council person, Ryan Dorsey, was the only council person to not support D'Souza and vote for him. But I do think that this time around, the council really was motivated to really vet a candidate because it didn't seem like the mayor vetted the last candidate, and we sort of immediately endured the same kind of lack of transparency with Fitzgerald. And so I think it is possible that this very strong-willed council would have said no to Fitzgerald had this horrifying medical emergency with his son not happened.
Well, when D'Souza resigned in May, what did Mayor Pugh say about how she planned to choose the next nominee?
She certainly pledged transparency in a sort of general way. She suggested, I believe, that there was going to be some sort of 7-person group that would approve it, that would be public. And none of those things happened, to be clear. None of the promises she said she was going to do about the next pick happened. It was all sort of shrouded in secrecy. Again, the council was very vocal about saying, we don't know who she's picking, or we're not hearing anything about it. So she really did not do this in a transparent way. And I think it caused a lot of concern in the community as well. And then at some point before she announced Fitzgerald, his name leaked. And then she sort of said, oh, he's one of the candidates. And there was even a day she suggested he was sort of off the, he was no longer going to be a pick because his name had leaked, which seemed strange at the time. But then a few weeks later, she nominated him. And then immediately people started to look into his record and they saw some things that concerned them. That maybe they would have been able to address with the mayor earlier had she been more transparent. I mean, I think it's very reasonable for the city and the city council, to suggest that maybe the mayor would have a list of a few people or a handful of people she's considering and present those publicly, at least so we know where she's at. But she didn't do that.
Have other cities followed a more transparent process?
Yes, they have. In fact, currently the Baltimore County, which is right down the street, not that far, is being very transparent about how they're doing it, and they really are making it public, and Pugh has not been doing that.
We know that interim police commissioner Gary Tuggle withdrew his name from consideration back in October. What do we know about other candidates the mayor considered?
There's a New Orleans person who has been mentioned a great deal, whose name is Michael Harrison, although he was not interested, but he seemed to be someone that people were sort of, his name was floating around. But
he didn't actually apply.
Yeah, right. And I wonder if how they're playing that, or if he's now more interested or less interested. But that was a name that was being bandied about. I mean, I'm just saying this was going around. I don't know. But there was a rumor of a police commissioner somewhere in the Pacific Northwest that was interested in it. Sabrina Tapp Harper, who's a former Maryland sheriff and a Baltimore police officer, has been floated around. And then another name who the mayor had kind of announced as running her Office of Criminal Justice, former Deputy Commissioner Tony Barksdale, formerly the Baltimore Police, was really someone that, including myself, immediately thought of early on. His name has been mentioned still. Whether or not he's even interested, I don't know, because he seems like he's up for this other position within the office. But those are some names I've heard. But again, because none of those names were thrown out in any sort of formal official way, I'm sort of having to be on the radio right now and like sort of airing rumors or things I'm hearing from other people, which I just, that's what I mean about this lack, as you said, this lack of transparency. Like, it would be great that I could emphatically say, hey, these people are coming up, or these people are being considered, or this person took a tour of the West Side on this day, but we don't really know that much still right now.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with journalist Brandon Soderberg. We're talking about what might happen now that Mayor Catherine Pugh's nominee for Baltimore Police Commissioner Joel Fitzgerald withdrew his name from consideration. The city has been searching for a permanent commissioner since May. There seems to be this great push and pull between wanting someone who is familiar with Baltimore and wanting an outsider with a fresh eye.
Right. We've had varying degrees of success with both. And so that's a little bit of a concern. I think, you know, we brought in Anthony Batts. He was not from here, but he also brought with him some scandals. Kevin Davis was not exactly from here, but from Anne Arundel County, the commissioner before D'Souza. Then D'Souza was brought in as like a serious veteran of the force, which when he was brought in, though, which was right around the time that the Gun Trace Task Force trial, these heavily corrupt officers came out, that the question then became with a veteran was, how could a 30-year veteran of the police force, who also worked in the Northeast, which is where some of them work, how did he not know? I don't envy anyone applying for the position. I don't envy the mayor having to pick someone, but a lack of transparency has only really muddied the waters for how we can respond to this. It would be good if we kind of knew what the process was a little more, I think.
Well, that's my question. What is your sense of what happens next?
I hope that this is a sign that the mayor will maybe try to be a little more transparent. I mean, I don't know why, but yesterday there was supposed to be a press conference in the afternoon, which the mayor would kind of run through her concerns. And instead that press conference was canceled. It wasn't said what it would return again. It just feels very disorganized. I'm sure it's hard to do, but I would hope that there would be some lesson that it's that what is going to happen to any candidate that's presented through the way the mayor is presenting the Fitzgerald just has a really hard battle, because you're going to have a city that's waiting to find something that's wrong with this candidate, and they don't have a lot of trust in the mayor when it comes to picking a police commissioner.
The Baltimore City Police Union, the FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police, released a statement emphasizing that the next commissioner candidate should have the proper experience. And union president Mike Mancuso also asked that, quote, the next police commissioner be given the appropriate autonomy to perform the required duties to the best of his or her experience, end quote. Have you heard from any police officers about what they make of this process and what they're looking for in a commissioner?
I think that we have a strange thing in the city, which I think is what that quote from the FOP is suggesting, which is that the city police are actually a state organization. And so there's a certain way which they're actually, ultimately the state is in charge of them, which is different than a lot of other cities. And then we have a mayor who picks a candidate, and then we have a city council who's kind of just expected to say yes to that candidate. And so I think police officers just want someone that can be a steady hand and someone that can come in and ideally be here for a while. I mean, we're averaging about a police commissioner every 2 years at this point. It's pretty brutal. And so I think the department, in terms of what I hear, is morale is a concern. They want someone that's going to show up and be a steady hand and ideally be here for a while.
Brandon, thank you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Journalist Brandon Soderberg's forthcoming book on the criminal activity of the BPD's now disbanded Gun Trace Task Force is titled, I've Got a Monster. Quick break now on the record, and then How does the uncertain leadership of the city's police department affect implementation of the reforms mandated by the federal consent decree? I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Baltimore has been searching for its next police commissioner since May. Meanwhile, the city continues with the next steps of policing reforms under its consent decree with the U.S. Justice Department. Last year, the police department focused on reviewing policies dealing with use of force, stops, searches, arrests, impartial policing, and transportation of persons in custody. Last month, the monitoring team released a draft of its second-year plan. It's focused on developing training materials on revised policies, as well as sexual assault investigations, crisis intervention, police interactions with young people, and community policing. Public feedback on the second-year plan can be submitted for another 2 weeks. We have links to the plan and how to submit comments at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Joining me to talk about what city residents and leaders are looking for in a police commissioner is Ray Kelly, Interim Director of the Baltimore Community Mediation Center, which serves as a liaison between the community and the Consent Decree Monitoring Team. Welcome back to the show, Ray.
Thanks for having me.
You attended the public hearing Saturday where residents shared their concerns about Fort Worth, Texas Police Chief Joel Fitzgerald, who was at that time still the mayor's nominee to be Baltimore's police commissioner. What concerns stood out for you?
I think what I heard mostly were residents were more concerned about the process and the selection mechanism than they were about Joel Fitzgerald as an individual. There was a lot of, we don't know who this guy is and why is he wanting to be the commissioner of Baltimore at this time? And that's kind of what the consent decree is spirited towards, that community-informed process. And a lot of people just felt like they knew nothing about him. And I think there was some kind of contention in the fact that he actually wasn't able to be there that day. But I think what I saw in that hearing were people weren't happy with the process of actually nominating this candidate.
What did you yourself make of Fitzgerald? Did you have an impression of him?
I think as police chiefs go, he would have checked all the boxes. I personally feel that in a position of chief coming into a city under a consent decree that you would want to present yourself. You would want to kind of engage the city that you're coming to and not just come in with what you want to do. I think had he came in and kind of engaged to quell the rumors, he would have had a better reception. What happened here in Baltimore, which is what always happens, is rumor and speculation get to the public before a person can actually present what their plan is or what their stance is, and then they have to come from a place of defense.
What is the community looking for in the next police commissioner? I mean, what type of leader do you think the city needs?
I think the main thing the city is looking for is someone that's going to be vested in the actual changes needed to bring about an actual public safety strategy to bring down the violence and address the root issues that have been here for years. So we're not looking for someone that's coming in with the master plan that solves all the problems. The community is more listening to someone that's going to be mindful of what the community perception is and what is actually written in the DOJ's findings report.
At that hearing on Saturday, residents spoke about the death of Freddie Gray, the consent decree, the revolving door of police commissioners, several years of more than 300 murders a year, the corruption trials of officers in the Gun Trace Task Force. I mean, what could the city do to restore public trust?
Well, I think we have to find a starting point somewhere. I think the first step is this stabilization and having a person that's willing to be accountable for what we do from this point on. Since the unrest, we've just had revelation after revelation of how deeply embedded and comfortable the corruption is in the BPD, and that brings skepticism from every level. So we have to kind of have someone come in acknowledging the problems that this department has had in the past, acknowledging the issues with community and police relations presently, and committed to reforming the police department the way the consent decree outlines.
Well, and that's part of why what you said and what people who testified Saturday said about the process of choosing a commissioner is so important. How should the process work?
In other cities, there is a more community engaged process. I mean, it is a hiring process where there is an agency that has protocol, and we understand that. But when it's something as big as the police commissioner, the community wants to have input. They want to know who the top candidates are. They want to be engaged. They want to know that this candidate is going to address the issues that affect their community. We all understand the language of community policing, but Baltimore City is a city of neighborhoods. So we have over 250 neighborhoods here, and all of them have their own individual priorities and needs. So there can't be a blanket, quote unquote, community policing model that's going to work everywhere in Baltimore City. There has to be a model for listening to those individual communities to make the overall strategy work in those communities.
In terms of the process of choosing a commissioner and making that more transparent, I mean, is a more transparent process really possible, or is there an inherent tension between getting real information somewhat privately and public candor?
I think there is an inherent tension, but that has to be addressed in this process as well. As people gain access, so to speak, to the process and become more educated and feel like they can influence the decision, that kind of tension will go into consensus, so to speak. People then won't speak against the process, but they'll have an opportunity to speak for one of those top candidates.
So are we back to where things were 7-8 months ago in terms of leadership of the BPD?
I think we don't have to go through another search. I think we've been through the search. They've had their vetting team or whatever the panel was, and whomever those top candidates were, we called them back to the table now and restart the process from there with a more public and transparent process.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Ray Kelly, Interim Executive Director of the Baltimore Community Mediation Center, a nonprofit chosen by the city and the U.S. Department of Justice to be part of the consent decree monitoring team. With all the challenges the city is facing, is the consent decree still a priority?
Yes, because that still remains a court order. That timeline moves forward with or without a commissioner. We're about to have our fourth, I believe, public hearing, and we move into a second year plan for implementation of the consent decree. So really, we haven't had a commissioner since May, but the actual mechanism of this court order still is in play. We have to make sure that whoever is in the head of the police department, the consent decree is still focused on changing the culture and the system itself. That has to keep going. As you know, in Baltimore, the tenure for a police commissioner is what, 2 to 2.5 years maybe? The consent decree is already projected to last 7 to 10 more years. So we have to prepare and put all the structures in place to make sure that we comply with the mandates of the consent decree, despite who the head is. It would be great for the advocates to have someone to hold accountable and someone to actually take charge of this police department, but the consent decree process is moving and we got to get engaged with it.
As I mentioned, the first year was about reforming policing policies. This coming year is about developing training materials. It seems like many of these internal reforms are not really apparent to the public.
Well, and that's an issue that we know, and community engagement becomes a big part of this whole second year plan, because there are public comments periods for all of these policies that are putting in place, and the community has an opportunity to say what needs to happen in these trainings, and that's a part of the process that the monitoring team is kind of responsible for getting that feedback. So the judge put out an order in November or October, I believe, that no one addresses the court except through the parties. So this is another access point where we just have to make sure that that information is getting out there. So I think that's what I bring to the table, is I'm connected, so to speak, to that advocacy group environment that have worked on this police reform and consent decree for years, and it presents a more accessible point.
Elaborate on that. I mean, your role is in part to help make sure residents' voices are heard throughout this process. How do you make that happen?
Well, the same way I have as an advocate for years, is just making sure that people are informed and they know about opportunities for access, and they know when there are places where they can directly engage. And this is a court-ordered mandate on this police department, where there is ample opportunity to actually put your concerns on the record, state how this is affecting your neighborhood at present. And we want to make sure that people know that they do have that opportunity.
You mentioned a hearing coming up. When and where?
So the monitoring team's fourth quarterly hearing will be January the 22nd at the Edgewood Lyndhurst Recreation Center. And it's from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Okay, well, we will put that information on our website. I want to get back to the relationship between the consent decree reforms and leadership in the police department. Judge James K. Bredar, the federal judge overseeing the consent decree between Baltimore and the U.S. Justice Department, has raised concerns about the lack of a permanent police chief. The Sun quoted Judge Bredar in an order filed in December, quote, "The long-term success of many of the decree's reforms will be influenced by and depend in part upon BPD's leadership, including a new commissioner," close quote. And months earlier in the search during the summer, the judge raised the question of whether the department is up to making reforms. What kind of faith can people have?
I think that's the concept of faith. We love our city. We don't want to give up on our city. And we all have those reservations. It's been one step forward, three step back for the past couple of years. And I agree with Judge Bredar 2,000% that stabilization is key. That leadership piece is key to ensuring that the department is committed to moving forward.
I really appreciate your talking to us, Ray. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila.
Ray Kelly is interim director of the Baltimore Community Mediation Center, the nonprofit serving as liaison between the community and the consent decree monitoring team. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have a link to the second-year plan of the consent decree. The fourth quarterly community report forum on the plan will take place on Tuesday evening, January 22nd, at Edgewood Lyndhurst Recreation Center, 835 Allendale Street. There's also a community forum this Saturday, January 12th, from 9 to noon at Morgan State University. I'm Sheila Cast. Happy you're with us on the record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.